This show is part of the Pod Tyrant Network. For more podcasts, interviews, and content, visit podtyrant.com. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with the man who just added a pocket trowel to his Christmas list, Adam Farmer.
Hey, I don't have a Christmas list. I'm almost 30. I don't have a Christmas list anymore. No Christmas list here.
But the Doctor does.
The Doctor does, and yes. We already know that, well, that's debatable, right? Santa Claus, Nick Frost, not sure if he was real or not, but the Doctor has a Christmas list.
Yep. We know the Doctor loves Christmas.
He definitely
gets a special every year because of it.
Yes. It is our Christmas gift that he gives to us every year, and honestly, it can't come soon enough this year. I'm already itching for Christmas.
Oh, yes, definitely. I just heard that... Game of Thrones, another show I really enjoy, just got delayed till usually it comes around in the spring, and now it's been pushed off until the summer. And so, yeah, all my shows are getting delayed. I don't like this.
No, I mean, especially now, we need some good shows. Summer used to be that hot time, at least in my mind as a kid, the time where you watch shows, and now we have nothing. There are no shows.
Well, when we were kids, we were just watching cartoons.
I know, and they were all reruns, right? It's because you didn't get to watch them during the school year, so you only watch reruns during the summer, but they were new shows to you.
I'm sure there's some Netflix series out there you haven't discovered yet that you can fill your time with.
I'm waiting to fill my time with Stranger Things. Have you started watching Stranger Things yet?
I have not. I keep hearing you're like the fourth person that's asked me that, so apparently I need to start watching it. I just started Daredevil today.
Oh, yeah, totally burned through Daredevil first. I mean, the first season or the second season?
First.
Are you flipping kidding me?
Hey, all my shows ended, and so then I was like, okay, I'm open, so I'm, like, asking advice from people, like, hey, what should I watch? Silicon Valley ended up being the one that I picked up, and I watched through the whole thing in, like, a week. And so then I'm jumping to Daredevil now.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, yeah. You definitely have to. That is, like... in my opinion, which probably doesn't count for much, but it is one of the best Netflix original series out there.
I'm also watching this fun Lego Star Wars cartoon series.
Yeah? It's called I saw things about that.
The Freemaker Adventures, and it's actually really funny. I was surprised. I wasn't planning on watching it, but ended up watching the first episode and really liked it. So that's another, and that's going on right now. So.
They have a goofy battle droid in there, right?
Named Roger.
How convenient.
So, yeah, there's all kinds of options for us, but no Doctor Who right now.
No Doctor Who.
We have some waiting. But while we're waiting, there have been some news items that have been dropping, and I did just bring up a Star Wars thing. Star Wars Celebration just happened over in London. You know, so Star Wars was in England, and... something that they did announce over in Star Wars or at Star Wars Celebration was that one of the former Doctors will be doing a voice in the animated series Star Wars Rebels.
Nice, nice. This isn't the first Doctor to do something like that, right?
Right. So we had David Tennant, who did a voice in the animated series Star Wars The Clone Wars. So this is Star Wars Rebels, and now we get Tom Baker. So see, there's always like different tie-ins from the big franchises, and Doctor Who seems to cross over a lot, you know, to other things. We see Doctor Who and Harry Potter, or Doctor Who actors in Harry Potter, and also Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean it's cool, right? A lot of the Doctor Who, a lot of the Doctors seem like they have broad experience when it comes to theater, sci-fi, what have you. They seem to be all over the place. So it's really cool to see them show up in other other avenues as well, be it a theater production, a BBC original, or Clone Wars, or Star Wars.
Right. So the voice that he's doing is a character called Bendu, which I think is basically like some manifestation of the Force in this like really large creature, maybe. I don't know. It was hard to tell from the trailer that they showed, but he's basically the wise. He's almost like maybe the Yoda of the series, where he's giving the Jedi in that series wise advice. So, and he's got a good voice. Tom Baker's got a good voice for that type of a character. So I'm looking forward to hearing it.
Wow. So I just jumped to the link that you shared for this, and that's a pretty imposing character.
Yeah.
He's a Titan, essentially. Like, he's massive.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see kind of how they use that character. But I think the showrunner of Star Wars Rebels, who is Dave Filoni, is a big Doctor Who fan. And I think that's why he keeps pulling in these doctors. I think he just wants to meet them. So he's like, hey, do a voice in my animated series.
So what you're saying is we need to get Dave Filoni on the podcast.
Right, that'll never happen.
I mean, come on.
We could try.
We can try. We could you try. Never know. Stranger things have happened. Another thing that recently dropped was, well, there were rumors going back and forth, some really strange news that Capaldi was going to be leaving, and Stephen Moffat potentially was hinting at a possibility that somewhere down the line, Matt Smith would be returning as the Doctor. You and I had never talked in person about this, never really corresponded about it, but there was some conversation on the Facebook page where essentially we said, yeah, it's not going to happen. I, for one, thought it was an interesting theory. What if Matt Smith would come back? So there was that rumor floating around there for a while, but just here recently, Matt Smith has openly come out and said that there is absolutely no way that he is going to be returning to Doctor Who, at least in a full-time capacity as the Doctor. So that rumor essentially blown up. Here's what he said. No, it's not true. I miss everything. I miss Steven. I miss Karen. I miss Arthur. I miss Jenna. I miss time traveling. I miss my friends in Cardiff. But onwards goes the march. It's Peter's TARDIS now, and I love what he does. So I'll watch as a fan. Not really surprising, right? Kind of what we all thought, but there you go. Matt Smith has confirmed he is not stepping foot back as the Doctor.
Yeah, that's definitely not surprising news. I think in these type of rumors, more often than not, we get the fact that it's not likely, but it's still fun to speculate. You know, you hear a rumor about Matt Smith coming back, the possibility of him coming back as the Doctor. And sure, it's probably never going to happen. But we like to still talk about, would we want it to happen? You know, what would that be like? Those type of things. It's just fun to discuss. But nothing that we're like jumping on any kind of bandwagon where we're thinking, oh yeah, that's probably going to happen. You know, we don't believe these rumors any more than anybody else does. It's more just fun things to discuss.
Yeah, right. I don't believe these rumors. Not at all. No, I'm right there with you. Never once did that thought.
Or maybe I'm just speaking for myself.
No, I mean, I for the most part, I take all of these with a grain of salt. As I mentioned to you before we jumped in, that there's definitely things that I've looked at and I thought there's no way that could happen, and then it ends up happening, or it happens and I've never once thought that was a possibility. Case in point, Statue of Liberty as being a weeping angel. So there's moments like that which probably has expanded my mind as far as possibilities more than it ought to be. But yeah, with this one specifically, things were far too thin to really consider Matt Smith as coming back. There was never any substance to what was being talked about, more just catchy headlines.
Yeah, and there's always these rumors. Most of these rumors are like wishful thinking. You know, there's been rumors about the possibility of them coming back to Paul McGann, you know? Like, he just had that short stint as the Doctor in the standalone movie as the Eighth Doctor. So it was like, oh, that'd be great if they, you know, they had a whole series about him. You know, we've had, you know, people wishing to see Tennant come back as a Doctor. Now we have people wishing to see Smith come back as a Doctor. These are all things that likely will not happen, but it's fun to speculate about them. But you never know. Enough time passes. You know, right now, sure, Smith's like, hey, I'm not coming back. But that doesn't mean 10 years from now he doesn't maybe want to come back to Doctor Who. And I think the thing I always think back to is in the 50th anniversary special when Tom Baker shows up as, what was it, the curator?
Yeah, the museum curator.
Yeah, and you know, there was some hints there that that was maybe a future regeneration of the Doctor. And even saying something about kind of revisiting the greatest hits. So there's always, you never know where they're going to go with this show. There's so many possibilities in the way they tell these stories. You know, you can't 100% say that they would never go back and maybe revisit a very popular Doctor and bring him back, you know, for a short period of time or maybe for a full season. So
it would be interesting.
It would be fun. Yeah. And what better way to mix things up?
Yeah.
You know, to do something like that, maybe a few seasons from now we get a return of the Eighth Doctor. You know, the 13th Doctor decides to regenerate into a face he already had. You know, and next thing you know, we have Paul McGann back as the 14th Doctor. You know, something like that. You know, it's just, you never know.
And there's always rebooting the universe, right?
Yep.
Something could happen.
We could do that too. Bring Amy back. Bring them all back. Let's just, you know, bring back all the greatest hits.
It's going to happen. Cool. Another piece of news that's shown up is that, well, it appeared and then it very quickly disappeared, is that the a new executive producer was announced to join Chibnall when it comes to Series 11. But then that tweet was later deleted. So that's thrown people up into the air. Hey, is this really happening? Is it not? Most people are hoping that it's happening because the executive producer that was announced is one Matt Strevens. Not really super familiar with him, but he's best known for a TV series called The Misfits. It was on air from 2009 to 2013. Supposedly a really, really great show having to do with superheroes. I'm not totally familiar with it, but Misfits, I have heard that name before. But anyways, he was somewhat announced in a tweet, from the official BBC handle, that he was the executive producer. Then it was removed. People got excited. Now we're not sure what's going on. But that was pretty interesting. Changing things up a little bit. Chibnall's coming in, adding the writer's room format, and then adding an executive producer alongside the showrunner. It sounds like things are getting changed up for Doctor Who Series 11.
Yeah, and this name really means nothing to me. I have heard of that show, but I've never seen it. So I was kind of hoping you were going to say Peter Jackson.
he gets his gold Dalek that he's always wanted.
We keep hearing that name pop up too, and that's, you know, another one of those rumors that people, I think it's wishful thinking. But yeah, it's interesting that they would add an executive producer, but I don't really know anything about him, so it doesn't really tell us much as far as what it would be like. I guess maybe I should go watch an episode of Misfits.
I'm trying to figure out where I can track one down from. IMDb has it rated 8.3 out of 10, and that's 73,919 people rated it. So that seems pretty big. And Rotten Tomatoes says that Misfits is 83%. Liked it. So 83% fresh. So seems like it was a pretty decent show and had a pretty good run, all things considered. So if that's any indication, if nothing else, it's pretty interesting that another name has been tagged for Series 11. That closes it up. I guess all things considered, not super interesting news.
Yeah, nothing groundbreaking, really. We're just kind of waiting for the show to come back.
Yep. We're at that stage.
While we're waiting, we have been doing our reviews of the Chibnall written episodes. And we're going to continue that today. So we have gotten up to Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. And I know you've had, you watched this one a while back. I'm guessing you rewatched it.
Yeah. I wanted to prep. So I started watching it, and then we've been taking a while.
Yeah, we keep putting it off, but we are doing it today. And I actually had a chance to watch this episode 3 times, Adam, in the past couple weeks.
That could either mean good things or terrible things.
It just means that I was looking for more to talk about, I think, more than enjoying it. But it was, so this was Series 7, Episode 2. And the original air date of this was September 8th of 2012.
That's crazy. Yep. That was a long time ago.
So, yeah, that show, and that's probably the last time I watched it up until the 3 rewatches recently. But that was an episode I remember when it first came out, I did not like it. It was kind of in the, you know, what was it? So season 7 of Doctor Who, so that would have been Smith's final season, right?
Yeah, it's okay. Where things started to get rough, and Moffat recently came out and said that he didn't enjoy that season at all.
Yeah, so I think this was kind of a frustrating time for me with Doctor Who. You know, you're ramping up to kind of knowing that it's the end for the Doctor and these companions, and you're kind of expecting really big things. And some of these episodes just kind of fell flat for me. And this was one of them. This was just an episode that I just wasn't on board with the first time I saw it back in 2012. But we'll see what my thoughts.
I was gonna say, are you gonna spoil it right now? I'm on the edge of my seat. I want to know. Did you enjoy it now? Maybe we should just go through the episode and kind of reveal at the end.
Maybe as we talk through it, I will talk myself into liking it more.
you tend to wear your opinion of episodes on your sleeve as you talk about it. So as we get into it, I'm pretty sure it will become painfully evident what you thought of it.
There's always bright spots. But yeah, so the Doctor, we get this, the episode starts out, we have the Doctor kind of picking up random people to be in his gang. We get a very recognizable Queen Nefertiti.
Yes.
And then we get this other guy that I guess is somebody that's from history, but I've never heard of him.
Yeah, I actually had to look that up. And
Riddell?
I'm not finding anything of note about John Riddell.
Okay, so maybe he's not. Maybe he's just a made-up character that the Doctor has interacted with, or we're meant to believe that he's interacted with him previously. But maybe he's just kind of based on these, you know, these big game hunters from, I don't even know what time period that would be, the 1930s. 40s or something.
Yeah, like, I don't know. My Google skills could totally be off on this one, but I'm not finding much of note. It's one of those ones where it's like, that's really ambiguous. Here's 10 people that it could possibly be, and none of them are big game hunters.
Okay, so yeah, he definitely fits a type, you know, a type of character that we've seen in other media. Almost somebody that you would see in like a Tarzan movie or something, you know? The random big game hunter that he's like going up, Tarzan's going up against or something.
Yeah, and honestly, and quite honestly, somewhat of a different character for the Doctor to associate with. I mean, he makes his living by killing
things,
animals. That doesn't seem like the typical person the Doctor would run around with.
But it seems like the Doctor had some good times with him, you know,
based
on their dialogue. So he is, and I think it made sense for them to introduce this type of a character into this story. You have Nefertiti, who is on one end of the spectrum. You know, she's the, you know, strong female, doesn't need a man, you know, doesn't need to rely on, you know, men to be, you know, the powerful figure that she is, and almost kind of uses men to her own device, right?
Right.
And then you have Riddell, who's like the opposite end of the spectrum, who is a bit of a chauvinist. You know, kind of big macho man, carries a big gun. So it kind of worked in that way that you had both ends of the spectrum. And that was, you know, I'm sure very intentional in the writing of this episode. Yeah. So we get those two characters, then we get the pawns. You know, the Doctor has decided that he wants, you know, he's got this thing that's happening. He's, you know, the ship and all that. So he's like, I need to get the pawns, you know, the pawns would like this kind of thing. So we get the pawns, and he doesn't just bring the pawns back, but he accidentally brings back Rory's dad, which I thought was pretty funny how that all went down.
Yeah. I mean, again, one thing that I appreciate by going back to Smith episodes is, I mean, the writing, right? There's a tangible comedic element to the episodes, even in moments where things look bad. there's still some humor to it, right? There's still the silver lining on the dark clouds. And this is one of those moments where they specifically put humor at the start of the episode. The TARDIS materializes around the ponds, and then materializes in the spaceship, and Brian walks out, and the Doctor is talking, monologuing, and then turns around and spots him, and then doesn't realize where he's come from, and essentially jumps all over him until Rory steps in and says, "That's my dad." And then he jumps all over Rory, because how could Rory bring his dad? I'm with you. I really like that part of the episode.
I think one thing that we can expect from Chibnall with watching these different episodes written by him is he writes good, funny lines for the Doctor. This episode is full of them. You know, just quick lines, like little fast, clever humor that made me laugh out loud. And you don't get a lot of that with Capaldi's Doctor.
Yeah, yeah, I mean his humor is spot on. Like there's it doesn't seem like there's forced jokes. It seems like they're all really well thought through. They make sense. They're unexpected. And
I don't know how much of that is like, it's probably a lot of it is the writing, but a lot of it's probably Smith's delivery. So, you know, how much of that is reliant on it, I'm not sure, but it's definitely this episode. I will say one of the positives about it was kind of the banter between the Doctor, especially the Doctor, Rory, and Rory's dad, Brian. Those three characters had a lot of back and forth that was really funny.
Yep. And it's one of those things that you can kind of appreciate from the episodes that we've seen thus far, is that Chibnall doesn't seem to take himself too seriously. We can probably toss 42 out of there because it was a little bit melodramatic. But every other episode seems like, although I still appreciate how it addresses different situations and how it moves forward, and there is some tension there, and there is some climactic aspects, it never goes over the top and takes itself too seriously. So I've felt, especially when you're dealing with dinosaurs on a spaceship, it's probably good not to take yourself too seriously. And it felt really good there.
Yeah. And I think probably my complaints as we go through this will be when it went too far with the silliness. There's a couple elements in this episode that I wish they would have stripped away. But, you know, it is cool to see the Doctor having fun again. And I think with this, you know, he has this, the dinosaurs are coming through the door, and you get the famous line, you know, the Doctor's exciting, you know, excitement and seeing dinosaurs on a spaceship in the title of the episode.
Yeah.
You know, is that funny, you know, that line, you know, he is giddy like a child, you know, because it's not just dinosaurs. They're on a spaceship, you know, and it worked. It worked up until they actually started interacting with the dinosaurs.
Okay, well, let's move forward.
But yeah, so we get Rory's dad, which I really like the character. So we were kind of talking about before with kind of the crossovers from Doctor Who into other media. This is an actor, and I don't know the actor's name. I'm not remembering it right now. Maybe you could fill me in. But he also played a pretty major role in the Harry Potter movie series.
Oh my goodness.
What?
Yes, he did, didn't he?
Yeah, he's...
Are you kidding me? How did I not? I feel absolutely ridiculous now. You're totally right.
Did you didn't know this?
No, like...
He's Mr. Weasley.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. Wow. I don't... Huh.
You did catch the other big Doctor Who, or the other big Harry Potter actor in this, right?
Well, Tennant, right?
No, in this episode.
Come on, seriously?
Solomon.
Oh, this is terrible.
The bad guy. He plays.
This is terrible.
He plays. Now I don't remember that. I'm forgetting the character's name in Harry Potter. He plays the kind of old man that's got the cat. That he's the caretaker of Hogwarts.
Oh my goodness. You are spot on. How in the world?
I think I'm not spot on. Everyone knows this except for you, Adam.
Come on now.
You're kind of new to Harry Potter though, right?
Yeah, like, and for those of you that haven't been listening or maybe missed the episodes where I mentioned it, I just recently, probably 4 or 5 months ago, watched through Harry Potter for the first time. And so this is the first time that I've rewatched an episode that has Rory's dad in it since watching Harry Potter. And honestly, it just never struck me. But now that you mentioned it, I feel really, really silly that I didn't catch it earlier.
Well, we should say their names.
Williams is Brian Williams. How convenient. Rory's dad is Mark Williams. And then I'm looking up Solomon right
Solomon
now.
Solomon is David Bradley. You know, he also played the first Doctor in that Adventures in Space and Time special that they did.
Which, swinging back to the news, was produced by the new executive producer.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
Well, there you go. So, yeah, there was a lot of familiar faces in this episode, and so I thought we should at least point that out.
Yeah, but I appreciate you pointing that out, because they weren't familiar faces. for everyone else but you.
But yeah, so Rory's dad, I did enjoy him being in this episode. I thought it's always fun to come across a character that isn't in awe of the Doctor right off the bat, you know? And he's kind of got that, like, dad. He played a dad perfectly. Because I know if my dad ended up on the TARDIS, you know, he wouldn't be, like, just falling in line and listening to the Doctor. He'd be questioning the Doctor, you know?
Yep.
That's how dads are, right? They think they know everything. So that's kind of how Rory's dad was in some of these situations. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. That's looking at the episodes that he was in. He's only in Brian Williams is only in two episodes. Rory's dad is only in two episodes, and yet in those two episodes, he's a solid character, right? He cemented himself in Doctor Who as being his character because he plays it so well. Because he is honestly an enjoyable character because of how he approaches Rory, how he approaches Amy, how he approaches the Doctor. So yeah, I'm with you. I like how he ends up on the TARDIS. His initial surprise where he drops the light bulb, but then that quickly fades away. He begins questioning the Doctor, and then even towards the end of the episode, he's still not in awe of the Doctor, but he's more of a willing participant at that point.
Right. Yeah. He just sees the Doctor as an opportunity to go around and see the world.
Yeah. No. Definitely.
And he has a trowel with him.
Yes.
Which I thought was interesting. I had not remembered that scene. And so rewatching it and seeing him with the trowel. And you have, you know, what other character famously carries a trowel recently?
Sonic trowel.
Right. We have River Song, who happens to be the granddaughter of Brian Williams. So I thought that was, you know, probably not purposeful, but a nice connection.
Yeah. Definitely, which brings up another interesting point, is that Rory is the first companion to step on board the TARDIS with both his father and his daughter.
Right, yeah. So a lot of their family has been on the TARDIS. Overall, that character was a bright spot for me in this episode. I think out of the characters they kind of introduced in this one, the weakest for me was Nefertiti. And I don't know if it was just because I couldn't take her seriously because she was wearing that ridiculous hat the whole time. But the hat was something that kept, every time I saw her, I'm like, why don't you take the hat off? And then at the end, you know, you do get it. You see the scene where I believe at the very end, she doesn't have the hat on. And then I'm like, okay, that's what you should have done at the beginning of the episode. Because I'm pretty sure nobody would have been running around, you know, kind of running away from dinosaurs and such with that big hat on.
Yeah, I think for me, just thinking through it on the spot, she's the character that's most out of her element. So like Rydell, other than the fact that we know that he's from back in time, he doesn't seem overly out of place. He just seems like you picked up someone from Jurassic Park and you dropped him into the show. But Nefertiti definitely sticks out like a sore thumb in the episode, again, probably because how she's dressed. I think there was a lot of potential for the character. They probably could have done a lot more stuff with her, put her in a lot of better situations. But I mean, for the most part, I mean, she did stand up. She she wasn't the damsel in distress. So that was a pleasant turn for that character.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe she just kind of rubbed me the wrong way from the get-go, because she's got a bit of an attitude and kind of an air of importance about her. But then she does show some really good qualities in that she is willing to sacrifice herself when it comes down to it, when Solomon realizes that he's not going to, he may be losing the dinosaurs, so he wants something valuable. And so he's like, hey, you got to give me this queen from Earth. She'll be very valuable. And in order to save everyone, she's willing to sacrifice herself. So she definitely showed, she had some good character moments, but I think it took a while for me to kind of to get used to her.
Makes sense. What did you think about the robots? They're slightly different robots than King Hydroflax, but robots nonetheless.
Yeah, I feel like that kind of those big oversized robots is something that just seems to come back in Doctor Who a lot. And I was trying to pinpoint, because I felt like they just seemed so familiar. I was like, what other episodes have there been where you had kind of these goofy oversized robots? And other than Hydroflax, and he's not really even a robot, but I guess he kind of was once he lost his head. I couldn't really place why I felt that way, but it seemed like something that had been done before. And just the personalities of the robots. I would say there were probably two main things in this episode that really stuck out to me as things I didn't enjoy, and the robots were one of them. I just wish they weren't in the episode at all.
Yeah, I feel like they probably had, like, they were there to provide some comedic element, probably. I think that's what they were intended to do.
I
don't think that was really needed. Like,
did you find them funny?
I found them to be, I don't know if funny is the right word. I don't even know if entertaining is the right word. I wouldn't say that I was like, they need to be cut from the episode entirely, but maybe cliche is the word I'm looking for. I don't know. They just felt they felt like an overused trope.
And I felt like there was enough humor otherwise in the episode that they really weren't needed. So you could have had these two bodyguard robots that were maybe, a little bit more menacing, but they really didn't even need to talk. I didn't feel like, and that, it just, they seemed out of place. It didn't seem to really work very well, and I could have done without them completely.
They were Tweedledee and Tweedledum, and they were out of place.
Yeah. But we did get Chibnall has shown us some of his favorite elements that he likes to revisit, and we got the Silurians again.
Yeah, I mean, so far they've shown up quite a bit. Which, hey, if he wants to continue to tie different elements together, I'm cool with that. As long as he does something similar to that moving forward, I think that'd be cool. I like it when things show up in Doctor Who, and there was enough space between the episodes that it's not that they were overused. So hey, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, I'm cool with it too. And I was kind of wondering about these Silurians, because that's the same doctor that we saw that they had already interacted with, right?
I don't know if it was the same doctor or not.
Okay. See, I'm starting to, kind of go into the whole, they all look like the same to me. In my defense, they did have the same actress play, like, literally
all
play three different female Silurians. So I think it's the same guy. But I was kind of wondering so when we left off with the Silurians, the doctor left and they all were going into stasis, right?
Yeah.
And so now we have them all in stasis, but they're in the spaceship. So I'm wondering, okay, did they, go into spaceship, launch off into space, and now this is the same ship,
Yeah, I think...
Like those two scientists that decided to stay behind, are they on the ship too? Like, we just never found them? Did they get jettisoned? what?
I think this was supposed to be like... I don't know. My understanding was that some stayed back on Earth and then some left Earth. And this was the group that left Earth and now it's returning. but I could be totally off on that.
Yeah, I didn't make the connection, and I'm sure with a little bit of research we could tie it together. But I wasn't initially making the connection on if this was supposed to be the same group or if it was a completely unrelated group. But you know, they met a very tragic end in that this guy shows up that you know, he's basically looking for thinks he can sell, and he shows up here and basically pirates their ship and, you know, kills them all.
He wanted the dinosaurs. They were of more valuable or of more value to him, and he jettisoned all the rest.
Yeah, I thought he was a pretty formidable villain. You know, he never felt too threatening because I guess he, you know, he's kind of an older man, he's injured. So you never felt like he was physically threatening. But the fact that he was willing to go to such lengths to make money, that he would just kill people, dinosaurs, Silurians, you know, without a second thought, that's what made him dangerous. And I thought, I actually really enjoyed him as a villain. And the doctor hated him, you could tell.
Yeah, and like you said, it wasn't that he was there was danger of him overpowering the doctor. I don't ever feel like the doctor himself was in danger. It was just he was the Solomon was willing to do anything and everything that he could to have the greatest financial windfall. And if that meant doing things that people might have given other people pause, he really didn't care. He was just going to do it, and I think that was the biggest thing for him. He just seemed evil and didn't really care about it.
Yeah, and the doctor, I mean, he knew, the doctor knew that he could best this guy. And Solomon knew the same thing, but Solomon went for the doctor's weak point, which is the people that are surrounding him. You know, the people that can't protect themselves. So he, instead of necessarily directly threatening the doctor, he's threatening, you know, like Rory's dad, you know, or other characters, like, "Hey, I'm gonna kill you. I'm gonna kill these people if you don't do what I want you to do." Yeah, he was definitely a formidable villain, and we kind of see the doctor basically got fed up with him, and it didn't end too well for Mr. Solomon. But before we get there, let's talk about these dinosaurs.
Yeah,
There
about
were
these
dinosaurs on a
dinosaurs.
spaceship.
There were dinosaurs, multiple dinosaurs of various kinds.
Yes. And the idea of this episode, I actually really love the idea of this episode. The storyline I thought was great. The fact that there were dinosaurs on a spaceship was a cool concept. I think the part I did not like was specifically the Triceratops acting like a dog, and the whole idea of like them throwing the golf ball that had, you know, grass on it, you know, as a way to get him to go where they wanted, and they rode him and all that. Like that was where it was just like, okay.
I can't even, there's nothing I can say. I can't defend that. You're right. Number one, it made no sense
My son
at
would have
all.
loved it. My son didn't watch the episode, but if he did, he would have loved that part. But my son is 4, so but yeah, I don't know. That was a little over the top for me. I liked the, you know, they had kind of the like, I guess they were like baby T-Rexes that were there. They had some raptors. You know, so there were some cool dinosaur moments where, you know, they're having to kind of survive and not get killed by these dinosaurs. But the Triceratops and the kind of being acting like a, you know, the family pet, that was a little much, I thought. That was the second element. So the robots was number one, the Triceratops was number two. Beyond that, everything else I actually really enjoyed.
Nice. And yeah, I mean there were some solid moments with the dinosaurs. So when they're fleeing, when they were on the beach, pterodactyls swoop in, they have to run from them. The end where Amy and Riddell are standing off with the raptors and they have to keep shooting them. That was a fun moment. In fact, in the moment, I forgot whether or not he made it out, and I was somewhat expecting him to get bit or something like that. Walking through and stepping over the T-Rex, that was a pretty good moment. There were some good dinosaur moments. Not all of it was campy or cheesy. There were good moments, but the Triceratops, that kind of threw everything for a loop. That is the one aspect of dinosaurs on a spaceship that ruins the idea of dinosaurs on a spaceship.
For you know, and for some fans, for some watchers, maybe they, you know, that might have been what they really enjoyed, you know, that they like that. But for me, it just didn't work.
I mean, I would say that for me, it's forgivable. Again, it's one of those elements that it's like...
Everything's forgivable for you, Adam.
We've seen strange things happen in Doctor Who. This is just one of those strange things.
It's always going to be there. Yeah,
it doesn't overshadow the episode for me.
Definitely, yeah.
Chibnall, Matt Smith, what have you, they are... Again, giving the Doctor's good lines, and then Matt Smith delivering the lines very well. So many fun little moments there. Definitely made the episode in my mind. I really enjoyed those different aspects. Even the kiss between the Doctor and Rory. It just Matt Smith. That's Matt Smith's Doctor, right? He is just out there. He just does stuff. He's impulsive. He just acts and reacts in specific ways.
It was a funny line there too, when Rory said something, I forget what he said, and the Doctor got all excited and came up and kissed him. And then the Doctor sees, you know, things aren't quite going the way that he expected, and he turns back to Rory and he's like, "Why'd you get my hopes up?"
Yeah.
And Rory didn't say anything. It was just, yeah, stuff like that. I was cracking up. But so, yeah, you had the Rory Doctor kiss. It's apparently only the second time in all of Doctor Who that you had two men kissing on screen.
Yeah, I saw that as well, and the first one involved Captain Jack.
Yeah, I was going to see if you knew who the first one was, but apparently you came across that fact, so I can't quiz you. Dang it.
I did, but I have a sneaking suspicion that I would have gotten it. Anyways, it just is low-hanging fruit at that point.
Yeah, Captain Jack and the Ninth Doctor, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
It kind of, the interesting thing for me for this episode was how it all ended. You know, you have Solomon, who has established himself as an evil villain. You know, there's really no redeeming qualities about this guy. And when it comes down to it, the Doctor, you know, part of his solution on how to solve the problem and save everyone and save the dinosaurs as well was to use this guy as a decoy and kill him.
Yeah.
Which he didn't have to do. You know, it wasn't something where he had to do to kill this man to save everyone else, and he just picked, you know, the right choice. He could have saved everyone, including him, but he decided instead to let him die with his ship, which I thought was interesting for the Doctor to do something like that.
Yeah, I kind of go back and forth.
We have seen the Doctor willing to save much worse people in the past. You know, we've seen even with the 12th Doctor, yeah, even with Davros, you know, we saw the Doctor was willing to see the good in him, as evil things as Davros had done, and still, you know, even was duped by him in the end, but was willing to save his life and give his own life, but, you know, at least part of his life to save Davros. And in this situation, he just got a little ticked off at this guy and was willing to just kill him, which is a little out of character for 11. You know, that's something maybe you'd see 12 do.
Yeah, I go back and forth in my mind. Because Davros, like you said, he somewhat tricked the Doctor. He showed that there might be some redeemable qualities there. Not only that, but there's also the aspect of the story where Capaldi could potentially feel responsible for Davros just based on what we saw with the little boy and not coming back for him. So there's those aspects there. Whereas with Solomon, you could potentially say that there are no redeemable qualities in him. There was no effort to dupe the Doctor. Down to the very last, the guy was only out for money, and it has already shown that he was willing to do absolutely anything necessary, even if it means mass genocide, to have the greatest windfall. So I don't know. Maybe there's a different aspect there where the Doctor is willing to, for lack of a way of putting it, pull the trigger when there is nothing else that could possibly happen. And potentially he's just never come across another situation like that. But like you said, it feels totally, totally out of character.
Yeah. I mean, I agreed with the action. I was not rooting for this guy to live by any means. In fact, there's times that I wish the Doctor would be a little bit more ruthless with some of these villains that he comes across. But in this case, I was so used to seeing the Doctor, you know, kind of always leaning toward the side of nonviolence and, you know, kind of, you know, bringing him to justice as opposed to murdering him. You know, there were other options you would think that the Doctor could have, you know, brought him with him, dropped him off at some kind of, you know, super prison out in the galaxy. But I actually enjoyed the change. I like to see the Doctor falter a little bit, because he does get a bit self-righteous at times where, you know, he stands so firm on the, you know, no guns, no killing, all that. It is nice to see him falter from time to time and see that he is flawed. He gives into his anger just like the rest of us.
I wonder if that might be an aspect that Chibnall plays out moving forward, that he might play off of that a little bit more, especially when it comes to Capaldi. It seems like there's a greater opportunity for Capaldi to be a little bit more ruthless.
If any Doctor could go dark, it sure, you know, sure as well can be the 12th. So if he's going to kind of explore that a little bit with this Doctor, I would like to see that.
I'm trying to think. So 42, no. Chibnall doesn't have the Doctor kill anybody. With Hungry Earth, does the Doctor doesn't kill
no, he was
anybody.
They ended up, the woman ended up killing the one Silurian, and the Doctor was not happy about that.
Yeah, you know, but he was okay with the Doctor doing the whole gas everybody, because there was still the opportunity to get back to their places if need be.
Right, yeah, but that was more just to get them all to their to their hibernation chambers, not necessarily to kill anybody.
Yeah. So, okay.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to go back, and you know, we didn't take the time to do it before we recorded this, but it would be interesting to go back and maybe pick out, especially in the modern series, different times that the Doctor has been a little bit more ruthless and either allowed someone to die purposefully or actually killed someone.
Yeah.
I don't think there are that many examples. I think one of the rare examples of him very blatantly causing the death of someone.
Yeah. I would agree.
I mean, we've definitely seen the Doctor not care about people dying, but
to be directly responsible for it,
right?
I think that's another thing.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting end to that character, and it was a good villain. I liked the interaction between the Doctor and Solomon. Overall, I thought it was a very, very strong point of this episode.
Yeah, I mean, again, two very good actors interacting with each other. They worked together very well, providing great dialogue.
Yeah, so it kind of, you know, that all happens, and it kind of ends up, you know, the Doctor kind of takes everybody back to where they're supposed to go. But we get Nefertiti and Rydell. I guess he decides to leave Nefertiti in the wrong period of time with Rydell in the plains of Africa, I guess. So that's kind of interesting choice. I'm not remembering my history enough to know what, like, Nefertiti's end was supposed to be, but maybe now history has been rewritten that she just disappeared.
It wouldn't be the first time where Doctor Who gives us a answer to a riddle.
Right. So, but yeah, that was kind of interesting. And then those two characters, I mean, you kind of saw it coming that they were on opposite ends of the spectrum, but, you know, opposites do attract. Kind of saw a little telegraph that those two characters were going to get
together. So here you go. The royal lady Nefertiti seems to have disappeared from the scene, and her place was taken by another queen. So there you go. Doctor Who just resolved a question in history for us.
Well, bravo, Chibnall. That makes more sense to me now. I'm glad that that's actually a historical thing that she kind of just went missing. So yeah, we have them, and then I guess the Doctor kind of takes Amy and Rory back to their place, but Brian, Rory's dad, decides, you know, this is an opportunity for him to kind of see the world. So it seems like he travels with the Doctor for a little bit, and we don't necessarily get to see their further adventures, but we know that they had them.
Yeah, some postcards here and there. Good for Brian.
Right.
Good for Brian, who was previously afraid of traveling, and yet now he's not.
And I did think it was funny that, you know, Brian got to have the moment where he sees the Earth from the open TARDIS door. And we get different moments like that with different companions where the Doctor, you know, allows them to kind of sit outside the TARDIS and see something amazing. But, you know, he had his lunchbox and a sandwich and his thermos and all that stuff with him. And I don't think he had all that stuff with him when he first got brought into the TARDIS. So they must have stopped back by his place so he could pick that stuff up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he has some business that he needs to attend to, and he strikes me as the type of person that always likes to be prepared. So giving him a chance to get his stuff together, it makes sense, and it would be very kind of the Doctor.
Or maybe his lunchbox was just sitting on the bottom rung of that ladder.
The entire ladder came.
So seeing this episode again, what were your thoughts overall? Number one, did you like it? Number two, does it give you, you know, positive thoughts on where Chibnall may take the current Doctor?
Yeah, so similar to the other episodes, well, similar to The Hungry Earth, Cold Blood and The Hungry Earth, they were episodes that when I thought back on them, they either it wasn't something that I'd want to go back and rewatch. To be quite honest, I wasn't itching to go back and watch Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. Didn't have the most positive memory of the episode. More of the laughable throwaway of season 7, series 7, but then rewatching it again, I'm pleasantly surprised. It wasn't a horrible episode. Definitely not my favorite episode, but it was entertaining. It was enjoyable to watch. I enjoyed it. I liked it. I would say that it's the impression of the episode has definitely improved in my mind. Does it give me happy thoughts, happy feelings for Chibnall moving forward? You know what? It's a good episode. He did a good job putting it together. If the only two knocks that I have against it is the, I want to say three horn. I just watched Land Before Time. the Triceratops acting like a dog and robots that although, they were annoying. You know what? They weren't terrible part of the episode for me. So if the only real knock I have against it is a Triceratops that acts like a dog, it's a good episode. You know what? Good job, Chibnall. You gave me a lot to laugh at. You gave me a lot to smile about. You gave me a lot to think about. Props.
Yeah, and I keep thinking of Chibnall as, you know, he's definitely going to be writing for Capaldi, which we still don't know that. You know, it's interesting to see these Chibnall episodes with Smith. But when I'm thinking of him now for the future, I'm thinking of Capaldi. But, you know, we may only get one more season with Capaldi with Moffat. And then with Chibnall, we may get an all-new Doctor who may be more similar to Smith. So, which maybe is something that Chibnall would be more comfortable writing.
Yeah, good point. He's going to be able to have his own Doctor.
So, you know, we may see a more lighthearted Doctor. It seems like Chibnall writes well for that. So that'll be interesting to see how that all pans out. But for this episode, you know, first time I saw it, didn't like it that much. And upon a rewatch, I did notice the strong points more. And I really actually like the villain a lot. I think it's one of the more interesting villains that we've ever had in modern Who. And just the fact that he elicited such anger from the Doctor, you know, you don't see that often. So that was, you know, a super strong point of the episode. And then Rory's dad, you know, was another thing. I think, you know, you said he does appear in another episode, but I think this is the only episode he has a very central role. I think the other episode he appears in, it's a pretty small part. There were definitely some strong points. Overall, I found it enjoyable, but the Triceratops was just a very weak point for me, and those robots, I had forgotten about those robots, and they were even more annoying than the Triceratops. So those, it's kind of like both ends of the spectrum for me. There were things about it that I thought were great, and then those two elements specifically were things that I just wish weren't there. But Chibnall, I mean, we have one more, right? One more Chibnall episode to get through.
The power of three.
Power of three. Okay, so we'll save our final Chibnall thoughts until after that one. But for now, I think we have talked enough about Dinosaurs on a Spaceship.
Wow, I never thought we would say that. We've talked enough about dinosaurs being on spaceships. Let's move along.
Yeah, so I think, did you have anything else you want to talk about before we wrapped it up?
Yeah, no. Sounds good to me.
All right. So as usual, you can leave us a review on iTunes. If you enjoy our show and you have not left us a review yet, we'd love for you to head on over to iTunes and leave us a nice 5-star review. You can follow us on Twitter at Bad Wolf Podcast. Facebook, we are Bad Wolf Radio. You can search for us there. We're the one with the black and white logo. And you can send us an email, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. And you can now find us on the Pod Tyrant Podcast Network over at geektyrant.com. Until next time.
Later days.